It's the basement.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7. The term superpower was first applied in 1944 to best describe the foreign policies of the United States, the Soviet Union and the British Empire. Following the Second World War, the British Empire transformed itself into the Commonwealth and its territories became independent, and the Soviet Union and the United States generally became to be regarded as the only two superpowers, and they confronted each other in the Cold War. After the end of the Cold War, the most common belief held that it was only the United States which fulfilled the criteria to be considered a superpower, although it is a matter of debate whether it is a hegemony or if it is a besieged global power. Today, we're experiencing the rise of Brazil, China, the European Union, India and Russia, who are believed to have the potential of becoming superpowers within the 21st century. I am Darren Katkuti, your host for the next half hour. On today's show of It's Debatable, we shall be inquiring about the changing roles of superpowers, and we shall be examining what are the new challenges for the international community and the rise of new powers in the 21st century. Remember that you can join our conversation with your questions and comments by sending an email on info@mrsa.org.mt or by logging on our online forum on www.mrsa.org.mt. Present in the studios with me, I have three guests for today. Our academic contributor is Valentina Kassar, who lectures in foreign policy and security studies at the University of Malta. And my other two guests are international relations students Luca Lacetagnola and Kyle Vella. I welcome you all to It's Debatable.
Thank you.
My first question for today goes to my special guest, Ms. Valentina Kassar, who is a lecturer in Security Studies and Foreign Policy at the University of Malta. Ms. Kassar is also reading for a PhD on the nuclear strategic cultures of USA and Russia at the University of Aberdeen. Ms. Kassar, what is a superpower actually?
The Oxford Dictionary defines power as the ability to do or act. It goes on to describe the notion of influence, authority, the capacity to exert force or energy. This gives us some insight to the notions affiliated with power in political terms. In this respect, power denotes the capacity to bring about change, whereby the outcomes are significant and affect the interests of those involved. We could refer to the definition put forward by the American political scientist Joseph Nye, and he describes power is the ability to affect the outcomes you want and, if necessary, to change the behavior of others to make that happen. Mm-hmm. He also goes on to point out that the ability to obtain, project and retain power rests on the possession of resources. So within this context of international relations, this tends to be equated with large populations, territory, natural resources, economic strength, military force and political stability.
I know that we also spoke about Joseph Nye when we studied soft power in international relations. Does this tie into the makings of a superpower?
Exactly. Nye has also popularized the term soft power, which he described as being the ability to shape the preferences of others. Yet this time, rather than relying on military or economic factors, power should be garnered through an attraction to culture and shared values. So this ties into the dynamics and the makings of a superpower to make its period one that is more stable, one that is more secure.
So does all power translate into the makings of a superpower?
Well, the international system has long been characterized by states that dominate against their contemporaries. However, the term superpower only emerged after the end of the Second World War. And this was the time when the United States of America, the Soviet Union and the United Kingdom emerged victorious and were in a position to reshape the new international order. Mm-hmm. Now, with the emergence of the Cold War and the loss of its vast empire, the United Kingdom's global influence subsided significantly, and the USA and the USSR came to epitomize more and more the idea of superpower in itself. In the meantime, the international community became carved into a bipolar order where their power and influence overshadowed world affairs.
In international relations, power is intricately linked to the notion of world order. Am I right on this?
Exactly. This is due to the fact that in view of the sovereignty of individual states, the international system is characterized by what we refer to as a quasi-anarchy. Consequently, stability and order still tends to rely to a great extent on the distribution and the balance of power between states. In fact, there is much debate in international relations theory over the impact of the distribution of power on international stability, and thus whether the international community, let's say, benefits more from a multipolar world order made up of a number of power blocks, or a bipolar world order.
As was the case during the Cold War.
Exactly. Alternatively, a single superpower or hegemon may emerge over and above its counterparts.
What role do international institutions play in the context of balance of power and maintaining stability?
One way in which states have dealt with the problem of order amongst themselves is by developing international institutions, and this provides a forum where they may engage with one another at a multilateral level. Yet even within such fora, the distribution and balance of power plays a key role, most notably, for example, within the structures such as the United Nations Security Council, in which the powers at the time of its foundation were given the right to veto all decisions. Now, the fact that such structures persist up to this day, and their reflection or otherwise, on contemporary international order would merit an entire program in itself, I would suggest.
Currently, we tend to talk of and distinguish between old superpowers, powers in decline, and even rising powers. How does this constant evolution in global affairs affect the dynamics between states and international order?
If we are to look at the lessons of history, we often analyze and speak of the rise and fall of great powers, tracing the cycles of rising and declining hegemony. Put simply, as a superpower rises, it risks overstretching itself, which in turn may lead to stagnation and eventual decline. In the process of this, other powers will rise to take its place. Thus, traditionally rising powers can be seen as a threat to the established hegemon, since they are perceived as seeking to displace it. However, if we look at the contemporary international scenario, we may know that the rise of competing powers may not necessarily be a threat or a challenge to the established order. The United States has emerged as the sole remaining superpower after the end of the Cold War. Yet, much debate has surrounded its unique status, where some ask whether this benefits the international community, while otherwise question whether the status is destined to decline or whether it's secure in its predominance. In the meantime, we've seen the likes of Russia and the European Union strive towards a more multipolar international order, where power is more evenly distributed as opposed to the hegemony of the United States. We've also seen the continuing rise of other powers, most notably countries like Japan, Brazil, China and India.
So do you think that these rising powers will replace the United States hegemony?
Well, the economic and military standing of the United States still far outweighs that of those that are rising. Moreover, rather than dwelling on the challenges that are posed by rising powers, I would say we should note the opportunities and the benefits that growth and stability bring with them, particularly within a globalized economy and the integrated political interests as a result.
That was Ms. Valentina Kassar, a lecturer in Security Studies and Foreign Policy at the University of Malta. Today we are discussing the role of superpowers in the international scenario. You are listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM. My discussion continues with my other two guests for today, Kyle Vella and Luca Lacitagnola. You are listening to Campus FM, and this is It's Debatable. The debate on superpowers today continues with my other two guests, Luca and Kyle. Luca, let me start with you first. Today we talk of new and old superpowers. Can you explain to us which are these new and emerging superpowers, and how can we identify such superpowers?
Well, first of all, it is better to reassume what happened in the last 20 years. After the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War, the world moved from a bipolar to a multipolar system led by the United States. It has been called the Pax Americana, the period in which the United States influenced the major international decisions, such as the most important military interventions of international institutions as the United Nations or the NATO, which operated, for instance, in Iraq, in Kosovo, or in Afghanistan. After the 9/11 attacks, it became evident that the USA would have never been able to face alone international challenges.
Okay, you mentioned that one of the international challenges for superpowers today is terrorism. So can you explain to our listeners the role of the USA on this terrorism issue?
Well, at the beginning, the US, through the NATO alliances and under the UN mandate, involved many Western and Arabic states to fight against terrorism. However, such war declined of popularity because of the lack of what is known as soft power.
Okay, when we speak about this concept of soft power, I know that it is an emerging issue within the context of international relations. So can you tell us exactly what is the meaning of soft power?
There are different meanings. The most important is the identification of the capability to control and influence the behavior of people, the capability to influence the decision of states through intangible sources. Valid examples can be, for instance, what is going on with China. Imagine just popular movies of Chinese or popular movies coming from India. They are in a sort of way influencing the values and the culture of Western countries.
Thank you, Luca. I mean, certainly this is a valid point which you are raising over here about how we can influence the culture, which would in turn provide leverage for a superpower to exert its influence in the international scenario. Kyle, in your opinion, who are the new and old powers?
As Luca mentioned, the old powers are the USA and the USSR, but the new powers, or prospecting powers, superpowers, are developing countries like the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India and China. These were first identified by Jim O'Neill in 2001 in a study of the world economy. The study focused not only on economic growth, but also on other important factors like population growth.
However, I noticed that there have been signs that they can also become military powers in the near future.
Yes, of course. Russia, for example, has inherited the Soviet military legacy, whilst the others have been slowly developing their military prowess. India still allocates a relatively small percentage of its budget to military purposes, but this has been increased in recent years. China has just announced that it will increase its military spending by 12.7%. China has also several border issues, and this can spur towards greater military development. In the current Libyan crisis, for example, China has dispatched a segment of its military to the region in a clear attempt of involving itself into peacekeeping or, if needed, intervention in the region.
Going back to USA, well, we can still say that USA still retains its status as a superpower, especially because of its military power in the international community.
Yes, but the near hegemony it possessed during the 1990s seems to have ended. It is being challenged by newly emerging economic powers, which seem to be gaining more and more influence in global decision-making.
Well, thank you, Kyle. Luca, Malta forms part of the European Union. It is one of the 27 member states. So our main interest as Maltese would lie within the European Union as an emerging superpower. Is it possible to identify the European Union as a new superpower?
Generally, it has been easy to underline the points which divide the different European states for culture, economic and political development, concluding that the EU is not an unified international actor. But it can be argued that in the last 10 years the EU members have improved cooperation, especially after the Lisbon Treaty. Firstly, from an economic point of view, the state members promise to cooperate for the constant and rational economic development. All states cooperate for the economic growth, so promoting internal trade among the different UN members, but also with the external one.
I would like to focus about the role of foreign policy and security affairs. I noticed that the EU has instituted a figure of high representatives to take care of the foreign and security affairs of the European Union. Can you tell me who is the high representative of the European Union, and can you give me an example of the role of the high representative with regards to fostering relationships with other states on behalf of the European Union bloc?
Currently, Lady Ashton is the High Representative of the EU, and in practice her work is coming out during this crisis of North Africa. In particular, we see has through her influence on the foreign policy of many European states, the EU now has assumed a unilateral position regarding the last events, for example in Libya. We see how most of the European Union members have condemned the massacres that are taking place in Libya at the moment. So we see how this figure is joining all the positions of the UN members, and she is enforcing the necessity to find a unilateral position for the EU regarding these important issues.
So that the EU could act as one power block of 27 member states.
For sure, the EU can and is finding now the way to act as a unique actor instead of many different positions, less in the previous years.
Well, I thank both of you, Luca and Kyle. Coming up after the break, we have our special guest for today, and we shall be asking for his input regarding the subject which we are discussing today. Keep listening. I welcome you all back. You are listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM. I am Darren Katkuti, your host for today's show. Today we're discussing the newly emerging superpowers in the international scenario. And present in the studios, I have my special guest for today, Dr. Giuseppe Schembri-Bonacci, who is a former Maltese ambassador to Russia, international lawyer and lecturer in history of art. Dr. Schembri-Bonacci, I welcome you to It's Debatable.
Thanks very much.
In the past weeks, during the United Nations Security Council, we have seen Russia, who has abstained from the vote which was presented by France and the UK and the USA most notably, and they were proposing to impose a no-fly zone over Libya, and Russia has abstained along with China. Does this mean that Russia is not interested in pushing its foreign policy in the international scenario, or is Russia trying to analyze what the repercussions might be if it expresses itself against a Libyan regime, and sort of it's trying to maintain cordial relations with a state which might still have potential in the international scenario?
There is this characteristic in Russian foreign policy that you have these graphic waves.
Mm-hmm.
For example, during Paul the First reign, during the end of the 18th, beginning 19th century, Russia was vehemently interested in the Mediterranean region.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Malta, Russian history, really has a really fascinating element. And then with Alexander, that's after Paul the First assassination, with Alexander, Russia retreats under Alexander's rule. Again, simplistically, I apologize. Russia practically lost the major outlets gained by Peter the First. But it suited Russia due to its specific Asiatic European situation, which had to be sort of given priority. Russia always gave utmost priority to its borders. And that priority becomes sort of even mystical. This continued because with the Soviet Union, especially during the 1970s, you had again this upsurge of Soviet now interest in the Mediterranean. I remember myself personally the Malta's role in the Helsinki process, a very radical, revolutionary, positive role Malta played, which was slightly even usurped by the Soviet Union. I remember Gromyko stating that even the Soviet Union is a Mediterranean state due to the Black Sea situation.
Which links with the Mediterranean.
Exactly. And then comes Gorbachev and the perestroika and the collapse of the Soviet Union, and Russia again loses the Black Sea, one might say, loses the main. Now you know about the Ukrainian-Russian conflict and the Ukrainian-Russian heated debate as to the Crimea.
So, because in the past, the Crimea was an important Russian naval base.
Of course, it was Russian, in fact. And this is how I can, at least from a general point of view, analyze Russia's role in today's turbulent times. But then there is another element, which unfortunately, except for WikiLeaks, is never given the appropriate importance or attention. You know, diplomacy is giving an image which is not the true image, well, for obvious, pragmatic, political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Russia's apparent retreat from this particular aspect might mean that there are some negotiations going on as to the Abkhazia. Image-wise, you would say, well, what is Dr. Schembri-Bonacci saying? We're talking about Libya. How does Abkhazia come in?
Abkhazia is in Georgia for the benefit of our listeners.
Yeah, exactly. What we're seeing now is an apparent retreat, an apparent passiveness of Russia's abstention. But I'm sure that there was a price for that abstention. I'm very sure.
Thank you, Dr. Schembri-Bonacci, for your intervention. Certainly, you raised interesting points. We hope to speak to you again some other time on It's Debatable. Present in the studios, I have Kyle and Luca La Cetagnola, international relations students, and we shall be resuming with our discussion. Before the break, we were discussing this new concept of soft power and the role of the economy with regards to superpowers. Kyle, what is the role of superpowers in international relations today?
Well, throughout the centuries, region and world powers have managed to establish stability and peace by balancing each other out and unifying whole regions into one entity. The first famous example is the Roman Empire and the Pax Romana, which brought peace in the Mediterranean for more than 200 years by taking control of the region.
Furthermore, I noticed that powerful states deter from each other from attacking one another, right?
Yes. This is the notion of balance of power. This concept was one of the mainstays of international diplomacy during the 19th century, when Europe was made up of great powers who divided the continent, and later the world, between them and prevented war through a complex system of alliances and treaties. Each state was afraid of making an offensive move because of the consequences it would have meant.
I believe that the clearest example would be the Cold War in this case.
Yes, of course. As we all know, during this period, the USA and the Soviet Union were both afraid of going to war because the repercussions of that war would have been dire. Instead, they were engaged in an arms race to prevent one another from gaining the upper hand. This period clearly illustrates the idea of balance of power, since most of the world was divided in two spheres of influence where the superpowers could act.
Some scholars even argue that this was a period of relative peace for the world. Can you comment more on this statement?
The fall of the Soviet Union could explain the increase of conflict during the 1990s because there was no one who could balance out the power of the US and prevent it from intervention in regional and national conflicts. The unrivaled power of the US was clearly illustrated in the invasion of Iraq and in 2003, when it acted even against the wishes of the UN. The main role of superpowers, therefore, is to create a peaceful environment and prevent chaos, especially where there are economic interests for many different states.
Going back to you, Luca, I noticed that these newly emerging superpowers might have an effect on the international equilibrium. Can you comment more on this point?
The effects of the new superpowers over the international equilibrium is already in progress. I mean, as I previously mentioned, the fact that the US is asking the support of different states to face the challenges of this century, as a result, we see the emergence of states which assume a zone leading role. I give you an example. Brazil today reflects not only the problems, the policies, and the main cultural characteristics of a single state, but also the integration process of the South American states in a large confederation, led by the same Brazil. In the Far East, in India, is now the most important economic and political competitor of China. Statistics show that in the next few decades, this state will become economically strong and reinforced at the same level of the US today. So we see how the international equilibrium has strongly changed in these years.
Should, for instance, the Security Council within the United Nations be enlarged to include these new powers as well?
Regarding the specific case of the Security Council enlargement, I think that the revision around its members should be taken in consideration. We should not forget that the Council reflects today the policy of 6 years ago, when a great part of the world was economically and politically colonized by a few states. Today, former colonies are great economic and political powers with large economic and military reserves, able to influence issues at regional as international level.
It can be argued that it is going to open with great democratic deficit and social and political disparities. What can you comment about this?
Well, it can be argued that this is going to open with great democratic deficit and social and political disparities. Yes, that's right. It is true, but the enlargement of the Security Council and the practical participation of these actors in the international arena can help us such states as China, India, Brazil to bring valid changes into domestic policies and at the same time offering the opportunity to the UN to face and solve such issues, which old powers have not been able to debate in their agenda at the end.
Thank you, Luca. Kyle, going back to you, what we are risking today is a transition from the old to the new superpowers, but can we ensure that this transition would be peaceful?
Well, international relations has always been characterized by the cycles of powerful states trying to gain hegemony and being replaced by new ones over the years. Some writers explain this by arguing that a military power often becomes stretched and stagnates. Its economy becomes weaker and new states emerge as economic powers. These new economic powers, in turn, begin to develop military strength and demand more and more political power. The old power, however, even if very weakened, still clings dearly to its status and rarely goes without a fight.
And do you think that we should be expecting conflict in the near future?
The case may be different for modern superpowers. In an age when liberalism is the dominant political trend, where we talk of global rather than national economy, and where military weapons are so devastating, wars are more likely to be avoided. The US will surely try to hang on to its superpower status. Obama recently spoke of threats to American superiority, and of the need for another Sputnik moment in the State of the Union speech. It is more likely, however, that America abides by the liberal notions it supports and advocates, and tries to reinvent its power rather than fight for it.
I thank you very much, both Kyle and Luca, and our academic contributor, Ms. Valentina Kassar. Unfortunately, our time has run out. We hope to speak to you again some other time on our shows. Today we were discussing the changing roles of superpowers on It's Debatable. Remember that you can join our debate by posting your questions and comments on our online forum on mrsa.org.mt. It's Debatable is a conjoint initiative between the Department of International Relations within the University of Malta and MIRSA, the Malta International Relations Student Association. I invite you to visit our website www.mirsa.org.mt for more information. A special thank you goes to Dr. Isabel Kalleja, who heads the International Relations Department, lecturer Ms. Valentina Kassar, and Ms. Joyce Gregg for their input. On the next show next week, Hilary Briffa would return and she would be discussing Turkish foreign policy with Cork and Derek and I, Darren Katkuti. I thank you all, our dear listeners, for joining us today, and I invite you to stay tuned to Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7. Keep on listening.
It's Debatable.